You're listening to Alternative to Sleeping with Ethan Allman here on WCDB Albany 90.9 FM and Comedy Pipe. I have on the phone the greatest comedian of all time. Please welcome Mike Birbiglia. How's it going, Mike?
I'm good, thanks. You're just saying that to overcompensate for the fact that that's how you introduce Weird Al, right?
Well, you know, Mike, I've been a huge fan of yours for like 7 years now, I think. So I think you count as the best comedian of all time.
I like your title of your show. I was just listening to the show this morning, trying to understand it.
Yeah.
And I think it's really good. I like the title a lot, Alternative to Sleeping.
Thank you.
Because everything is.
Right. Especially right? For you, yeah.
Well, I think for everybody. I think everybody would a little bit rather be sleeping.
Yeah.
And so you have to always be competing with sleeping.
You know, the full title is Alternative to Sleeping with Ethan Allman, and I named it that before I realized that...
Oh, Sleeping with Ethan Allman.
Right, but I did that before I realized that it was, like, Sleeping with Me. So
yeah.
I thought it was funny, though, so I kept it.
I had that, you know, I had that same thing with my show, which is now my book and my movie.
Right.
Sleepwalk with me, which at a certain point, people would say to me when it was running in New York, they'd go, oh, I get it. I get the joke. You're saying sleep with me. I'm like, oh, no, I don't think that's the joke. And they're like, yeah, it is. I'd be like, no, that's actually not my intention. I just meant it kind of as an inclusive gesture, you know.
Right.
Just a little bit of a play on Firewalk with Me.
Yeah.
Which I always thought was a good title.
I think it's a great title.
Yeah. But yeah, no, people's brains always go there, I think, is what it is.
Yeah, they can't help but try and relate everything to sex or some kind of inside joke.
Yeah, I think they always have one foot into the sex pool.
Right.
So if you invite them even a little bit, they'll put both feet into the sex pool.
Now, your new show, My Girlfriend's Boyfriend, has there been anything with that?
Well, yeah, that too. You know, people constantly misname it or misrepeat it as my boyfriend's girlfriend.
Okay.
Which is, I guess, the bisexual version of
right.
My Girlfriend's Boyfriend.
The spin-off version.
Yeah, my mom called it that yesterday. Which,
oh, really?
Yeah, but it was disconcerting. My Girlfriend's Boyfriend's a fun one. You know what the only thing that's unfortunate is that now there's a movie of the same title. That is like, yeah, it didn't come out in the theaters, but it's like on Netflix and stuff. It has Alyssa Milano. But it was a completely parallel development of that title, I guess. I mean, unless they saw me do it somewhere, but I didn't see them. I didn't see their movie title. So sometimes people will confuse it for that. And yeah, and that's a boring story. And I've got a lot more of those.
Well, Mike, I saw you a couple years ago over the summer. Maybe it was only 2 years ago at UCB. You were trying out My Girlfriend's Boyfriend stuff for first time.
Sure.
It was excellent, and I'm really excited to see it in Albany. But how much has changed since then? Would you say?
Sorry, I'm hearing outside my window, which is like an alley in New York City, like some kind of chainsaw, which is completely. Are, but of course, when I'm on the radio, they're someone taking up chainsawing as a hobby. How much? The question was, how much has changed from Sleepwalk or from My Girlfriend's Boyfriend since you saw it?
Yeah.
Well, I've taken heavy notation. I wrote down Ethan in the margins of the script when you came, and
excellent.
Just make a note of exactly what I've changed since then. No, I have, it's progressed, I think, quite a bit, because I'm trying to think of the progression. I did it at UTB, I did it at Union Hall in Brooklyn, I did it on the road quite a bit when my book came out.
Right.
I did like a 10-city tour when my book came out 2 years ago. And, yeah, I mean, and the other thing is I'm always changing it, like, a little bit. I'm always making tweaks. I'm always trying to come up with new lines and concepts and make things kind of more mm-hmm. sealed, you know, more sealed tight and strong, because a lot of times you can just, I don't know, I'm going to open the door. My cat is complaining. Here's why my cat's complaining. My cat Ivan is a Russian blue, kind of a mutt from the pound. He's 16 years old.
Wow.
I've closed the door so there wouldn't be as much sound on the radio interview, and he's whining because he wants to be in this room for no other reason than that the door is closed.
Well, maybe
he just doesn't like that aspect of things.
But maybe he's a big fan of my show, and he just wants to be in on the interview.
That's possible. The odds of that are really low. I mean, right, you have to right. make a lot of leaps. First of all, that he listens to radio at all.
Right.
It was a really unusual case for a cat. Second of all, the idea that he would go outside of New York City radio and go to Albany radio is a giant leap. But
right.
You know, Ivan is capable of a lot of giant leaps.
You never know what Ivan's up to. You're not.
So anyway, Ivan's now in the bedroom. And to answer your question, what was that? What was the end of it? Where did we leave off?
You were just talking about that you change it from city to city sometimes a little bit.
Yeah. And so I continue to change it and. And I'm excited to be at the Egg. You know, the Egg, I performed at once before when I opened for Mitch Hedberg and Stephen Lynch, who were touring together.
You know, I was going to bring that up because that was the first time I ever saw you and first time I ever saw Stephen. I went just to see Mitch, and I came out of the show with two new favorite comedians. So it was really a great show.
Thanks. Yeah, that was that was an interesting bunch of shows there. I opened for them, I think maybe three or four cities.
Okay.
One of them was Albany. One of them was Atlantic City. We were at the Borgata one night, and there was a lot of back and forth as to whether or not who would be the headliner of the show, because it was like a split bill.
Right.
Lynch, Hedberg, and. There was a miscommunication, and so I was in Atlantic City, and I was the MC, and I was like, please welcome Stephen Lynch. And I look over, and people are applauding, and he's not there. And then Mitch. And I'm like, please welcome Mitch Hedberg. People applaud. He's not there. And so I'm standing there, and I'm like, all right, well, I'm in a little bit of a pickle here. Apparently, neither comedian is here. And so here's what we can do. We can either, I can continue talking for about 10 or 15 minutes until one of these guys shows up, or we can just take a little intermission. And the people were cheering, you know, because they were drinking at that point, so right. They were kind of riled up. And so then I just did a set until Mitch kind of came in. Mitch and his wife Lynn came in. I could see them come in. They like walked across in front of the stage, and then they went backstage. And then I brought on Mitch. And the rest of the show was fine, but it was just like it was one of the more dramatic events that has happened in my comedy career.
Now. Besides that one, I saw you at UAlbany, I think a year later.
That's right.
And have you been to Albany since then?
I don't think so. I was in Schenectady.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I was in Schenectady. It was, I think, myself and Greg Giraldo and maybe another comedian. There was a bunch of us maybe Bob Marley, a comedian.
Oh, okay. I must have missed that one.
And whenever, you know, Bob Marley is a really funny comic.
Yeah, he's great.
Yep. But you always have to say the comedian afterwards.
Right.
And so As though you've completely misunderstood time and space, and people assume that it's the the dead musician.
Right.
Bob Marley, the comedian. So I was in Schenectady. I think it was at Proctor's.
Okay.
Does that ring a bell?
Yeah.
I played SUNY Albany, and John Mulaney was on that tour with me as well.
Yeah, that was a great lineup as well.
That was a fun show too. Yeah. Who else was? Were you at that one?
Yeah, it was John Mulaney, Kyle Grooms, and you. I think it was just
the
three of you.
Oh, Kyle's great.
Yeah.
Yeah, Kyle's hilarious.
And I saw you with MC Mr. Napkins at, I think, Rhode Island.
Oh, in Newport, yeah.
And now he's...
Yeah, I saw that you interviewed him on your radio show as well.
Yeah, he's been on the show a bunch of times. He's a good friend of the show now, so...
Oh, great.
It was, it's like, all your shows are bringing me to new great comedians, so...
Yeah, I like to, you know, some people, I've never understood this as a concept, but some comedians like to have... people who are not as funny as them open the show. I'm the opposite. I feel like I think it should always be kind of the best group of comedians that you can assemble.
Yeah, definitely. I think you've done a good job with that.
Well, thanks.
Now, we were talking about Mitch. I know his anniversary of his death was a couple weeks ago. I know you've done like specials and stuff talking about him. Did you do anything this year?
Yeah. No. I mean, it definitely. You know, my wife and I. Talked about him and kind of reminisced about him, but we didn't do anything in particular. I wrote about it in my book, but it was a very, very, you know, very difficult loss, I think, for everybody.
Yeah. Now, years ago you put out an album, My Secret Public Album, Volume 1A, and I think we're all wondering when 1B is going to come out.
Well, you know what that album is? I mean, that album was, I was writing in my Secret Public Journal, which is my blog, and then I was reading pieces on this other radio show called the Bob and Tom Radio Show.
Yep.
And then at a certain point, you know, people really liked it, so I was like, I should just release this as its own album, you know, and then... And so I did it, and then at a certain point I was like, well, I think that I'd like to use these stories as stand-up, you know? I'd prefer to kind of, like, work them out on stage.
Yeah.
And make them better and stronger and funnier. And so then I did that, and then I made my Secret Public Journal live, and then I just kind of struck... My Secret Public Album 1A from existence, and so unfortunately there is no 1B. I don't think there's going to be a 1B.
Do you regret naming it that? Like obviously you named it with a plan of releasing like 15 more.
Yeah, no, I thought that was going to be my meal ticket. Was the numbered and lettered volume of my blog? I was really making my plans for retirement. I was like, by age 36, I will be at 21Z, and I'm gonna call it a day.
Do you think you'd ever put out recorded blog entries as like a podcast or something?
You know, I had this weird thing where that experience of making that album made me realize how flawed of logic that is, because the premise of those journal entries, and people can subscribe to my blog on burpigs.com or mysecretpublicjournal.com, but the premise is that it's a travel log, and I'm writing it sort of as I go. And so every week I write down from my memory things that happened, you know, stories from the week, that kind of thing. But they're not going to be that well written. in that first draft.
Right.
I'm like a tenth draft comedian. I only start getting warm after like the sixth or seventh draft, and then I'm done around 10. So, you know, those first drafts, those are not, they're not winners.
When you experience something, do you immediately know that, oh, this is going in the journal, or oh, this is going into the set, or something like that? Or does it usually take a couple weeks or a couple months to reflect on it before you really are into it?
Very rarely. Let me enunciate because we're on the telephone. But do I know while something is happening that it will be a story that I will tell? Because it's when you're in the moment of, I mean, because most funny stories are just kind of painful things that happen, like the story on My Secret Public Journal Live. That's like my favorite story to tell is the celebrity golf story, where I was asked to perform at a charity golf tournament, and it ended up, you know, they put me after like an 11-year-old boy who survived leukemia, and it was really not conducive to comedy, and then I bombed, and then I talked about cancer because I was trying to like play to the room specifically, and it's just like the worst gig ever. And I remember at the time just being like, you know, this is the worst day of my life. Like, this is the worst thing that could have happened. I came in to these people's event, and like I made, in which is like a really well-intentioned event, and then I made it worse than it was. And I was like, my life can't get any worse. But then when I tell that story on stage, people laugh and relate to that. Because I think the reason they do, like, this is crazy. I told that story this year at the Michael J. Fox Foundation's like annual event that they have in New York to raise money for Parkinson's research. I told that story, and then they, George Stephanopoulos came up to me after my set.
Wow.
And was like, I love that story about the celebrity golf tournament. And he is like, he is a guru of public speaking. And so if he can relate to that, then I feel like, then certainly much lesser orators can relate to it.
Yeah, and it's just like a hilarious story, so it just works so well.
Oh, thanks. But anyway, to answer your question in this circuitous way, you know, I don't really, when I was living the celebrity golf moment, I wasn't going, well, this is hilarious. I was like, this is horrible, my life is over.
So, but you weren't like saying, you know, this is horrible now, but at least I can turn it into something good. There's no like redeeming. Okay.
No, I mean, occasionally that something like that'll happen where, you know, you'll, I mean, when I had the sleepwalking incident that I talk about in my book and my show from Sleepwalk With Me, I definitely, when that was happening, I was definitely like, this is crazy. Like, this is unbelievable. Like, this is going to be the strangest and possibly funniest story that I could tell. But it was definitely, it took a long time for me to be comfortable telling it to strangers, because I thought people would think I am completely crazy. And what I found was that the crazier the story you can tell, and still have people relate to it, and have it be from an honest place, is really kind of the sweet spot where you want to be.
Nope.
That's kind of, yeah, I don't know. That's it.
Do you think that kind of relates to stand-up as well, where like the more relatable you are, the more of a reaction you get to from the audience?
The more relatable you are, the more reaction you get?
Yeah, because I kind of feel like, at least for me, when I hear a comedian talking about something that I've experienced or something similar to what I've experienced, and not even just like the storytelling aspect, but just just like something minor that just relates to me. It just makes me want to laugh more. I don't know why.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I think that's kind of the key. And I think I think all comedians are trying to do this. And I'm trying to do it, which is like find the most relatable thing you can that you haven't really heard anyone else say.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think, like, you know, the reason that people, that comedians get accused of being kind of hacky or who get judged by other comedians as not being as good is, you know, you can be relatable to a point where what you're saying is, yeah, it is relatable, but mm-hmm. it's not novel as a right. thought, certainly. Not only is it not novel, but it's not even phrased in a novel way. You know, because everything's been done, but at least people kind of rephrase it in their own words.
Yeah.
sometimes people don't bother to rephrase.
Right. Now, since you tell very personal stories and telling personal stories and sharing like embarrassing stuff, like that's a really kind of an intimate thing between two people, just, you know, outside of shows. You know, when you're telling that on stage, do you see like audience members like feeling like they're friends with you just because they've kind of shared that experience with you after hearing about it on stage?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, this tour, the My Girlfriend's Boyfriend tour, has been, I think, particularly fun for me because I've been going out and like signing stuff and taking photos with people after the shows.
Mm-hmm.
I've been kind of making a point of it. People ask for hugs sometimes, which I think is funny. I think it's like a good sign because it shows like that people feel like they're close to me, even though we've never met.
Right.
I think it's, I always think that that's, I usually think that's a pretty good thing. I mean, I find with my, the people who come out to my shows that they are, there's not an inordinate amount of them. In other words, like if you go to like, I'm trying to think of who's like a huge act right now, like it's not like Kevin Hart or like, Aziz Ansari or something. I mean, I actually don't really know who's where's the big guy. Daniel Tosh, I think,
right.
has like a huge, huge crowd.
Yeah.
And it's my shows are certainly not like that. But I will say the people who come are awesome people, and I'm thrilled. I really like my fans.
<They're Yeah>.
much, I have a very low quotient of douchebags in my audience. Like a good group of people. I actually think it's good. I think it's like a good singles event in a way. Like people should
right.
come and try to meet the other people because they seem like really good people. and they're focused on the show
right.
and they're good and I don't know. I really appreciate them.
Well, I'm a big fan, so I take that as a compliment.
Oh yeah, you should meet up with somebody at the show.
Yes. Now I know you do a lot of writing with your brother Joe.
Mm-hmm.
Has he ever wanted to get on stage, or have you ever thought about doing like a Sklar Brothers kind of thing with the two of you?
He got on stage when I was first doing comedy. He was starting doing comedy on stage at the same time,
mm-hmm.
and it was at the comedy studio in Cambridge, Mass. That's where he was living. And, there were a couple shows where he and I were both billed comedians on the show, Joe Birbiglia, Mike Birbiglia, but it was completely, you know, separate.
Right.
And he just didn't enjoy being on stage. He didn't really like it. And so, you know, we collaborated on stuff. You know, he co-wrote, along with me and Ira Glass and Seth Farish, he co-wrote the screenplay for Sleepwalk With Me. So...
Mm-hmm.
And, Joe's a great joke writer.
Now, for the Sleepwalk With Me movie, are we going to see that on DVD, or is it going to get any kind of release that you know?
It is, actually.
Oh, really?
It's coming out in movie theaters this fall.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, through IFC Films. So It's yeah, we're thrilled. And then yeah, and then another thing is I just shot a short film for This American Life, their live event, which is they have a live cinema event May 10th, which is in movie theaters all over the place.
Oh, cool.
600 movie theaters. So, but I have to go. I want to thank you for having me on the show.
I was just going to wrap up. Thank you, Mike.
Oh, okay.
I really appreciate, you know, you calling in. I'm looking forward to the show.
Oh, I can't wait. Please come say hello after.
Oh, I absolutely will.
And I will hug you.
That would be great.
But only on request.
Okay, I will ask you for a hug.
All right, I'll see you there.
All right, thanks, Mike.
Take care.
Bye.